It is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Baron. Arthur joins us every Monday at this time, and we talk about food. And I understand meatloaf is on the menu for today. Good morning, Arthur.
Don't we all love meatloaf?
I know of...
Well, we hate meatloaf. Actually, there are people who hate meatloaf.
You know, and there's people that like tomato-based meatloaf and gravy beef-based. There's so many different opinions because there's so many different meatloafs.
Well, I make so many different meatloafs. This morning I did a little search on my files, on my computer files, and came up with quite a few. But truth be told, I do make meatloaf, once or twice a month. I have been disappointed in my own meatloaves lately, and I saw a meatloaf recipe in the New York Times, not on the food day, on an off day. You know, on page 3 in the right-hand corner, there's fashion advice and some other kind of advice, and then maybe a couple days a week there's a recipe. Well, one day there was a meatloaf recipe that had the flavor profile of my mother's meatloaf, let's say, and which is a tomato, which has tomato. My mother would put a small can of Hunt's tomato sauce in the meat, and then a small can on top of the meat. That was her, quote, glaze or whatever, finish. In any case, this meatloaf had, you know, all the essentials that I usually put in my meatloaf, but in way different proportions, meaning way more seasoning. And I was a little skeptical about 2 tablespoons of salt in a 3-pound meatloaf. Seemed like a lot of salt. But I followed the recipe exactly. I didn't make this recipe, you know, the day it came out. And I figured if the 2 tablespoons of salt was a mistake, they would run a correction a couple days later. I never saw a correction on that. So I put in the 2 tablespoons of salt. And the meatloaf in the Times, instead of having my mother's Hunt's tomato sauce, had just 2 tablespoons of tomato paste. But it had a lot of thyme, dried thyme, which is one of the seasonings I usually put in a meatloaf. I like beef and thyme. Anyway, I'll give you the whole recipe. But it just spurred in me this recipe, which I made and loved and will make again soon, maybe today even. I don't have the meat in the house, but I'm going shopping. It spurred this whole meatloaf memory thing I have. Let me just start by saying Bob Harned, who I've been eating with now for 40 years and cooking for 40 years, meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and peas is his favorite meal. And for years, I made that for him for his birthday. I guess we've been away sort of for his birthday in May lately, so we haven't eaten at home. But if I was eating at home, I mean, if I want to give him a treat, that's it. It's easy. Except, as I say, I wasn't all that thrilled with my last couple of meatloaves, so I was fishing around for some other meatloaf to make. Anyway, way back when, you know, I would say it had to be early 80s, mid-80s, meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and whatever vegetable became a trendy menu item in trendy restaurants. I think it's because it was the era of yuppies, and young urban professionals grew up on their mother's 1950s, 60s meatloaf, as I did, and so that was nostalgia food for them. And not really nostalgia, but relatable. How about that? It's relatable food for these new restaurant goers in these restaurants that were geared up for them. Do you remember the 80s? We had these enormous restaurants. They were almost always pink and blue. Those were sort of a peachy pink. those were the colors of the day. And they were noisy, and they were gathering places. The food almost didn't matter. But Bob was in heaven because I was a restaurant critic for the New York Daily News at the time, and we were out in restaurants all the time, and the fact that he could now get meatloaf and mashed potatoes, his favorite food, in a restaurant, which you, up until then, you know, you could get it at a diner, maybe all-American kind of restaurant somewhere outside the city of New York might have meatloaf on the menu, but not in New York. And at one point, I remember this so funny, my then English, British editor, who knew nothing about American culture, much less New York culture, but nevertheless was made an editor at the Daily News. This was the, she was a tabloid person from London. She came to me and she said, you know, you should do a story about, I was the editor of the food section, you should do a story on how meatloaf is back. And I said, you know, for our readers of the New York Daily News, meatloaf never went away. Mm. We have always made meatloaf. So I don't know, do they, if the Brits like meatloaf. Italians do like meatloaf. And two of the meatloaves in my recipe files are Neapolitan meatloaves. One, you know, the word for meatballs is polpette, little polpe. A meatloaf is a polpettone, a big one. So if you make the same mixture that you use for meatballs, but make it into a loaf and bake in the oven, you now have a Neapolitan meatloaf. You can put tomato sauce on it if you want, but that would be another meatloaf. I have a Neapolitan braised meatloaf of all things. And then I remember years ago I used to make Marcella Hazan's basically braised meatloaf. It was difficult. It is difficult to handle a whole meatloaf in a pan, turning it to brown the outside, and then putting in a liquid to let it simmer for an hour. I'd rather make meatballs, to be honest. But I do love meatloaf, and I don't make my meatloaves in a loaf pan. I make them in a baking dish in the shape of a loaf, let's say a loaf of rye bread. And I like that the baking pan, the roasting pan, gives the meat a chance to shed its fat, and it'll fill up your dish with delicious fat from the seasonings and the meatloaf. And this is something I'm going to do next time around. Like my mother, she used to scatter potatoes around the meatloaf. So the potatoes roasted in the juices from the meatloaf. Now, was that good?
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
I put ketchup on top of my meatloaf when I bake it. Is that sacrilegious?
Not at all. Okay. You kidding me? This terrific meatloaf, Marshall. Yeah. One of the best things about it was, you know, unlike so many recipes, the glaze did not have any sugar. It was just ketchup, and actually a half a cup of ketchup with, again, more Worcestershire than I would normally use, one tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce stirred together, and then slathered on top of the meatloaf, and it was really good. I'm going to do that again, ketchup and Worcestershire, but a lot of Worcestershire for the ketchup. So, all right, while we're on this meatloaf, I might as well give you, by the way, this meatloaf recipe comes from Kay Chun, who I suppose by her last name is Chinese, and I'm looking at her other recipes in the New York Times cooking website. And she makes Anglo food, but her last name is Chinese. Anyway, my mother did not saute the onions that she put in the meatloaf. She grated the onions on the coarse side of the four-sided grater, and one smallish onion, not more than that. But this recipe calls for one large onion, chopped, 2 cups. That's a nice size onion. 2 cups of chopped onion, which you will saute in 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil. I followed this recipe to the letter, and so I'm offering it to you to the letter. It was so good. And by the way, this 3-pound meatloaf lasted us for 3 days, for 3 meals. So if you say, oh, that's too much for me to make at one time, meatloaf holds up very well. It's also good cold, and it's also good in sandwiches. And actually, I discovered you can also zap it in the microwave just to warm it through, not to make it hot. So anyway, back to 2 tablespoons of oil, one large onion, which is about 2 cups of minced onion, and 5 large garlic cloves, minced. Now, the recipe says about 2 tablespoons. I had more than 2 tablespoons, but I thought if I'm going here with big, I might as well go all big. And so I had closer to 3 tablespoons, really, with my 5 large cloves of garlic, and it was fine. And then after you've sautéed the onions and they're tender and golden, throw in the garlic and sauté for another couple of minutes until you can smell the garlic, and then put in the 2 tablespoons of tomato paste and stir that through until it's, you know, all homogeneous, well combined, and then you can put that aside. Now you're going to make your meatloaf. So I like to start with the bread. Now, speaking of meatloafs and polpettone and polpette, I remember that my friend Anne, a Mendolata nurse, Italian descent, told me when I asked her for an Italian-American meatball recipe, she said, you know, it's exactly like your Neapolitan meatballs. I make my meatballs, except if you're using Wonder Bread or Pepperidge Farm or an American loaf white bread, you don't need to soak the bread because it's already so moist and fluffy. And I have made meatballs like that, according to Ann Nurse, and they come out great. This recipe calls for 3 half-inch thick slices of white sandwich bread, but she is the author of the recipe, does have you soak it in 2/3 cup of milk. Now, I used, because I don't keep white bread, sandwich bread in the house, but I do always have some kind of whole wheat bread. I had a very good soft whole wheat bread, integrale. It's actually called integrale. It's baked from a bakery in Soho that's sold around the corner from me. But it's really nice, soft. You can make a sandwich with this whole wheat bread, but plenty of whole wheat. And I thought, why not? So I measured out my 3 ounces of crustless whole wheat bread, because this does have a crisp crustless bread, which I knew wasn't going to be good in this. And I did soak it in 2/3 cup of milk. Now, and I had to break it up. So once your bread is soaked in milk, break in the eggs. 3 pounds of meat calls for 3 large eggs. I like to beat them aside, you know, in a little bowl on the side, and then put them in with the bread, and then beat that all together. And now you can add your seasonings. Here you go. 2 tablespoons, she says, of kosher salt. I use 2 tablespoons of my sea salt that I keep. 1 teaspoon of black pepper. I actually had a rounded teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. And a rounded teaspoon of dried thyme. And you mix all this together, and then you add 3 pounds of meat. Now, I use 2 pounds of beef and 1 pound of a pork, but, you know, if you go to the supermarket, they do have meatloaf mix, which is usually equal parts beef, pork, and veal. That works great. The day I went to buy the meat, I didn't see the veal, and so I just used pork and beef. That worked great, too. Now, here's a little tip from a friend of mine who I just learned this morning has passed away, but it's already 1.5 years ago. Her name was Leslie Newman. Leslie, with her husband David, wrote the Superman movies, I guess from the 1970s and 80s. David wrote a lot of other things that are screenplays. He died very young, in his 60s, and Leslie made a new life for herself after that, and I haven't seen her in many years. But at the height of their screenwriting glory, David and Leslie used to give a New Year's Day party that was frequented by a lot of Upper West Siders who were celebrities, because they lived on the Upper West Side. And they had a huge, you know, one of those huge apartments in those old pre-war buildings. Anyway, Leslie was such a famous party giver that she ended up getting a book contract to write a cookbook called Feasts. One of her specialties at this party was meatloaf, and I always wanted that meatloaf recipe. It's in the book Feasts, which is still in print. Not maybe not in print, but you can buy it on eBay or Amazon, I'm sure. Anyway, the one thing that Leslie taught me, I haven't made that recipe in many years, but one thing I continue to keep in mind when I'm making meatloaf a la Leslie is when you put the, I put the meat in last, if you notice, because I don't want to overwork the meat. This is an old bugaboo, but it's sort of correct, because if you overwork the meat, you end up with a very tight product, meatloaf, too tight. So you want it to have some juice, you know, you just want it to be juicy. And I find that if you overknead it, it just doesn't, it may be just as juicy, but it doesn't seem just as juicy. So Leslie tells you to, after you've mixed in the meat, and by the way, what I use to mix my meat, I'm not using my hands so much these days. Well, in this meatloaf, it was a lot of meat. I could have put my hands in there and tossed it around and mixed it all together, but I'm enjoying using, this is funny, Marshall, and everybody, I'm enjoying using this fork, this very, very large silver-plated fork. I have two of them, and I also have a matching very large spoon. The spoon was the spoon that my grandmother used all her life in mixes of potato for either potato pancakes or potato kugel, because the tarnish on a silver spoon keeps the potatoes from turning black. They may turn pink, but they don't turn black. When my grandmother died and I got to look through some of the stuff, her stuff, I found the matching forks. And I never thought too much about it. My grandmother always said, oh, these were my mother's. This, the spoon, was my mother's spoon. The other day, I was using this fork to mix the meatloaf and the bread and seasoning ingredients together. And Bob said, oh, well, where is that fork from? I said, you know, my grandmother always said this stuff came from her mother, but I never researched it. And he did. And he found that there is a stamp on the fork, and it comes from Poland. So, and this flatware company went out of business in the early 20th century. It was in business from the mid-19th century until the early 20th century. So there you go. I'm mixing my meatloaf with the same fork my grandmother probably used. I like that, my great-grandmother. Anyway, you put the meat in, you mix it nice, you want it to be thorough, but a la Leslie, instead of, you know, really meshing up with the hands, make sure it's loose, and then turn it out into a roasting pan that is, you know, more than big enough, which has, like my mother, a space around the side, and form it, pat it. You can smooth over any creases. It works with your fingers. You can pat it and form it into a loaf. It fits very nicely into a 13 by 9 inch Pyrex baking dish, which is more or less what I use. I have a couple different ones like that. And it goes in the glaze, a half a cup of ketchup and a tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce. Blend them together. Spoon it over the top and over in the sides of your meatloaf. 350-degree oven for a 3-pound meatloaf, an hour and 15 minutes. Could be an hour and a half, but I find the hour and 15 minutes was quite enough. And the inside of the meatloaf has a nice rosy color from the tomato, which I somehow didn't expect. I don't know why, since I always put some kind of tomato inside my meatloaf. By the way, another meatloaf that, I mean, I have so many meatloaf recipes, but this one I'm going to recommend to you because you can find it on the internet. This is another one of the meatloaves that I like to make, and it's from Bill Blass, the fashion designer.
Yeah.
Didn't he live in Litchfield County?
Yeah, for a while I think he did, yeah.
I think he did. Well, Bill Blass may have led the way with making meatloaf trendy because he entertained at home and served this meatloaf, which we called the Bill Blass meatloaf. It's not very much different than the one I just gave you, but the seasoning isn't quite as assertive. And he also, instead of ketchup, uses chili sauce on top. You can still buy Heinz chili sauce, a product I like a lot, actually. And then he would, over the chili sauce, he would put strips of bacon. And so he baked this, also at 350, also an hour and 15 minutes, three-pound meatloaf. And the bacon would get so nice and crisp and be lots of fat around that. Well, this meatloaf was made at a restaurant, Mortimer's, which was a lunch place for a lot of iconically rich people from the Upper East Side. Brooke Astor was a regular. Pat Buckley, of course, with Roots and Sharon, well, at least her husband's family. Nan Kempner. They all used to lunch at this restaurant, Mortimer's, which was presided over by Glenn Birnbaum, who was as snobby as they were. And so he could look down on them. And he would serve them his meatloaf. Well, Bill Blass's meatloaf. Bill Blass was his buddy. Bill gave him the recipe. Now, if you go online, there are going to be a lot of Bill Blass meatloafs around, and they're all going to be slightly different. The one that I have in my book, New York City Food, actually is the one that Bill Blass published himself in his, I guess it was his autobiography. However, let me say, the recipe there leaves out an essential ingredient, and that is sour cream. And I noted on mine that there are versions that add sour cream, because he has breadcrumbs, but no liquid. And he has... And he uses fresh breadcrumbs, so maybe you don't need the sour cream. Anyway, if you're kosher, you can't put the sour cream. And everything else about this is perfectly kosher. Meatloaf is kosher, no reason not. Anyway, I was going to tell you about some other fabulous recipe I got from the New York Times cooking section, because I'm into making other people's recipes lately. You know, I'm not bored with my own food, but it's time, you know, sometimes I need a little variation.
You know, if you have meatloaf, you have to have mashed potatoes with it.
Absolutely, with lots of butter and cream.
You just have to. I mean, it's a marriage made in heaven.
I know. I usually make my mashed potatoes with russets, with baking potatoes.
Yeah.
However, I don't know, something got into me on New Year's. On New Year's Day, I made mashed potatoes because we were eating cotechino, which is a very gelatinous sausage, a boiling sausage. And cotechino traditionally is served with lentils on New Year's Day, with lentils and mashed potatoes. So I said, lentils for me and my friend Maurizio, mashed potatoes for Bob. So I made them, however, with Yukon Golds. You know, Yukon Golds, and I have some in the house today. I should do it again just to check myself here. Or maybe it was those potatoes were awfully sweet. Now, I'm very careful when I buy potatoes because I do not want to buy a potato with even the slightest bit of green. Interesting, there's a small Korean-owned grocery in my neighborhood where Sandra, the owner, is the only person I know who understands this. Her potatoes are in a bin covered with cardboard because light, and apparently especially, says Sandra, especially fluorescent light like she has in the store, turns the potatoes green very fast. Light is what turns those potatoes green, and they can be very bitter. They say green potatoes are toxic, but I think you'd have to eat an awful lot of them to get sick. However, you don't want to eat them because they don't taste good. So I was very careful with those Yukon Golds. They were all golden. They weren't at all green, but they were strangely sweet. Now, I haven't made this in a long time, so maybe Are Yukon Gold sweeter than russets?
Yes, because I'd made with Yukon Gold some mashed potatoes around Thanksgiving, and not only was it sweeter, it was a little creamier than I like. I didn't get that hearty feeling that you get when you make it with russet.
Well, what potato do you like to use?
Russet. Yeah.
Russets, yeah. Yeah. I'll probably go back to russets, but I got to use up the goldens that I have here. If I make another meatloaf today, which is sort of likely at this point now that I've gotten my mouth watering for meatloaf, I'll put them around the meatloaf and see what happens. I'm sure they'll be fine roasted.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Listen, the nice potatoes. It's just not the flavor I expected.
I make potato soup with russ with.
That's not a bad idea.
With those type of potatoes, it's creamier. That's all.
Mm, all right. Well, I'm just you know what, being low carb for so long, I'm sort of unaccustomed to eating potatoes in general. You know, I've broken the ice with pasta, which is my preferred carb anyway, but I do love potatoes. I'm eating a more well-balanced diet these days.
That's good.
And smaller quantities because I cannot outgrow my skinny clothes.
That's right. Important fact. Important
you know
fact.
That routine, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
I got rid of all the fat clothes. And Bob said the other day, why don't you get rid of them? I said, well, I never expected to gain the weight back. But now I've got to watch myself. So that's the story. I have next week. As I said, I've been making things from other people, recipes from other people, and the other thing that I'm obsessed with are these cookies that were David Tanis, who's one of the columnists for the Times, had this recipe for triple sesame tea cakes. They're cookies. I don't know why they're tea cakes by him, but by me, they're sesame cookies. What makes them triple sesame is that they're a shortbread-type cookie, butter, flour, and sugar, but part of the butter, in essence, is tahini, sesame butter, sesame paste. And then you also add some sesame oil to the dough, to oomph up the sesame flavor, and then you roll the dough in sesame seeds before you bake it. So the triple is sesame oil, sesame paste, and sesame. And they're really good.
All right.
So actually, if you subscribe to the New York Times cooking page, which I suggest you do, it's very, very helpful. It's there. Triple sesame tea cakes.
All right.
Now I'm going to go measure out my tahini. I think I have just enough for another batch.
Okay.
No, I'm making another batch because I often share my baked goods with my next-door neighbor because, one thing, I don't want them in the house for too long. It's too dangerous. And two, I love my neighbor, and she enjoys these things so much. So I mentioned to her the other day that I made that recipe. She said, but you didn't give me any. I said, I had to get them out of the house as soon as possible. They were too good. And I had another friend was here, and I sent her home with them. So I'll make you another batch. So today I'm going to make it. It's easy. And by the way, the day that I made the dough, I discovered that the sesame seeds I had in the house were rancid. Be careful about that. They don't last forever. And you need quite a few sesame seeds for this recipe. So to roll the dough in. So I put the dough in the refrigerator for 2 or 3 days, and then did it when I got the sesame seeds, you know, rolled and baked them when I got the sesame seeds. It was fine. So if you don't want to bake them all off at one time, you probably could freeze this dough. It's a very easy dough, too. So, my friend, I hope you're feeling better.
I am, and we look forward to...
Now
you got me going. Now we've talked meatloaf. I'm gonna make a meatloaf tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I like meatloaf. I mean, you know, and as I said, it reheats. You make sandwiches, whatever. You can even make if you have left. This is something Bob loves. If you have leftover mashed potatoes, slather some mashed potatoes on a slice of meatloaf, and bake it in the oven. And if you want the potatoes to get real sort of brown on the top, you could beat an egg in before you put it on top of the meatloaf.
Sounds like a very quick...
Well, got to have leftovers.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Right.
All right, Arthur.
All right, take care, Marshall.
Take care.
And everybody else, too.
All right. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio. You'll find the show, of course, on demand at robinhoodradio.com. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.